This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, is free trade giving way to trade wars? What's behind the Trump administration's use of tariffs against friends and foes alike? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Earlier this year, U.S. President Donald Trump, citing national security concerns, imposed tariffs on imported steel and aluminum from Europe, Canada, Mexico, and China. While this move pleased some U.S. steel producers, it has rankled other domestic industries that depend on foreign imports to make value-added products. The imposition of tariffs has invited retaliatory tariffs threatening the U.S. agricultural and manufacturing sectors, who are likely to pass their higher costs on to consumers. Regarding China, which flagrantly engages in unfair trade practices, many economists argue that the U.S. tariffs imposed fail to address China's theft of intellectual property and its refusal to open specific sectors to foreign participation. Historically, the United States has long been the biggest champion of global trade, viewing the opening of borders as essential to strengthening not only its economy, but the global economy as well. It led the way in building the international trading order in the 20th century, rising to become the world's preeminent economy. Tariffs were used as a way to offer protection for certain industries, but free trade was considered the tide that would eventually lift all boats. However, instead of viewing trade as a mutually beneficial relationship, critics say President Trump has described trading relationships as a zero-sum game in which the United States loses out when other countries have more favorable terms. Mr. Trump has seized on trade policy to prop up industries that he has promised to revitalize, such as manufacturing, by limiting foreign competition. Meantime, a Chinese delegation will travel to the United States later this month to resume negotiations as a veritable trade war intensifies between the world's two biggest economies. China and the United States have engaged in a round of reciprocal tariffs since July 6, when Washington officially imposed 25% tariffs on more than 800 Chinese products worth $34 billion. Beijing retaliated by imposing the same percentage of retaliatory tariffs on 554 U.S. items, also worth $34 billion. Well, with us to discuss the Trump administration's approach to trade, especially the use of tariffs and broader implications for the U.S. and world economy, are two distinguished international trade experts. William Reinch is senior advisor specializing in trade at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Bill Reinch previously served as the Undersecretary of Commerce for Export Administration during the Bill Clinton administration, and Edward Gerwin. He's senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute, and that's a centrist think tank here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Bill Reinch, you were here earlier this year, and we talked about China. Let's go back. What is the underlying problem that you think President Trump is trying to address? And do you think that the remedy, that is the imposition of tariffs on national security grounds, is the right solution?
Well, the second part is really the issue. I think there's a lot of agreement that the administration's diagnosis of the China problem is a correct one. And the report that they issued under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 74 is a litany of intellectual property theft, forced technology transfer, a variety of discriminatory actions against American companies doing business in China. I think most people would agree those are the right problems. The remedy, tariffs, nobody thinks will work. The president loves tariffs. Nobody can understand why. What he has precipitated is exactly what you said, a tit-for-tat round of we put on tariffs, they put on tariffs in the same amount, we respond, they respond. That's continuing with no sign of resolution in sight.
Turning to you, Ed Gerwin, for your interpretation of what the underlying problem is that President Trump is trying to address with the imposition of tariffs. And also please address, you know, the imposition of tariffs on goods from our allies, such as Europe and Canada and Mexico.
Well, I absolutely agree with Bill that the administration does deserve credit, particularly for this report highlighting the degree of Chinese technology, what they call assimilation, but which in many instances is outright theft of American and Western technology. That's the problem. But I agree with Bill that the solution, these tit-for-tat tariffs, won't work. It's interesting that Peter Navarro, the president's advisor on trade, said the Chinese will fold when we impose these tariffs. They won't retaliate. They will take the action that we want them to take. But in fact, what has happened, as Bill mentioned, is that the Chinese just matched us tit for tat, and it's going to continue that way. The real solution, in my view, is to work with our allies instead of alienating our allies by imposing tariffs on them, treating them as if they are guilty of the degree of trade violation that China is guilty of. We really need to work with them and cooperate with them because so many of their companies face the same kinds of technology challenges in China that ours do as well. So we should be allies rather than pushing each other apart.
Well, speaking of allies, Bill Reinsch, President Trump also imposed tariffs on goods, aluminum, steel, from our allies. And even if there's a bit of a truce now in relation to a recent visit by the president of the EU Commission, that still sours them on cooperating with the United States against the real culprit, which is China. And it also hurts our industries. In fact, some of the most iconic industries, for example, blue jeans, bourbon, and Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
Well, yes, this gets back to what Ed said. I think experience with China has shown that we do best with them in a coalition. They don't like to be an outlier. They don't like to be the only one. If you can get everybody else in the world telling them they're on the wrong side of an issue, you can actually have an impact. The Obama administration did that a couple times with some success. President Trump is in the process of irritating all the people that we need to help us. Between the way he's dealt with the Canadians and the Mexicans, the Koreans, the Japanese, where he's trying to pressure them into a free trade negotiation that they don't want to have. It's hard to form a coalition over here when you're irritating all the potential coalition members. I think the steel tariffs were the first step in complicating this problem, where he used the excuse of national security, which gets progressively less credible as he plays with the numbers. You know, he just doubled the Turkish tariffs a few days ago and said that was based on national security, which makes no sense to anybody. He leaves countries out, he puts countries in. I think the real thing that got the Europeans excited, though, were the potential automobile tariffs, which are now, at least for them, postponed pending negotiations.
Well, let me get you to respond to that more elaborately, Edgar, when you brought up the subject. But again, how do these tariffs on steel and aluminum, on our allies, undercut our ability to collectively combat the Chinese threat?
Well, I think it goes back to what Bill was saying, that we really do need to be in alliance if we're going to confront China. That was the beauty of American participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We were going to have 12 countries who are going to coalesce around a broader set of higher rules. And if we had combined that with a similar deal with Europe, the United States would have been in a very powerful position, along with our allies, to say to China, we have agreed on this new set of rules on things like subsidies and state-owned enterprises. The rules certainly weren't perfect, but we are coalescing around a group of stronger rules. And China, you're the outlier, and you need to begin following these rules. That, to me, would have been the preferable path.
So back to you, Bill Reinsch, just trying to play the devil's advocate, try to put ourselves in the shoes of the Trump administration. If, in fact, the imposition of these tariffs on allies and enemies alike, let's say, if it's not really sound economic or trade policy, what do you think is behind these unorthodox policies?
The president, during the campaign and actually before, his views haven't changed on these issues for 30 years. He's been consistent, and he pursues a policy of victimization. The United States has been taken advantage of by foreigners. The country changes, and the particular foreigners change from month to month and year to year, but we're always being cheated and taken advantage of. And we're also the victim of bad agreements negotiated by his predecessors. So everything is somebody else's fault, and it's usually the foreigner's fault. And he was successful in the election because he got everybody who felt victimized to support him in this campaign. To the extent there's an underlying economic policy, and I think there is on the part of his advisors, I believe that it is really to reverse globalization. What he wants to do is to pull the United States out of a globally integrated market. If you look at what he's doing in NAFTA, in the automobile sector, it's very explicit. We want car companies to bring production back into the United States. We don't want you to invest in Mexico. We don't want you to invest in Canada. We want you to invest here. We want you to change your supply chains to bring them back here. What he's telling American companies in China is, come back here. Get out of China. Get out of China for national security reasons. Get out of China because they're cheating you. What we want you to do is to come back to the United States. It's unraveling globalization and trying to take us back to a time when supply chains really didn't exist. And everything was made here and exported, or everything was made there and imported. And the fact is right now, everything is made everywhere.
The concept of comparative advantage comes to mind. What happened to that? That's a pretty sound concept. Nonetheless, once again to you, Ed Gerwin, put yourself in the shoes of Mr. Trump and some of his advisors. What else is at play here? Politics, other factors in addition to what Bill talked about?
Absolutely, Carol. There's a huge political calculation here. President Trump has what I like to call a Madison Avenue approach to trade. He likes the big splashy commercial. He likes to be able to tell people he's doing something and to point to something. So when he imposes tariffs on steel and aluminum, he can go to a steel plant or an aluminum factory. Secretary Ross is going to an aluminum factory next week, and they're going to tout the reopening of American production, the creation of new jobs, all of that. It's a very straightforward and simple message. And it plays to his base, and it's a story that's pretty easy to tell. Unfortunately, the global economy today is a lot more complicated. So, for example, for every job that these metals tariffs are going to create, economists estimate that they're going to destroy 16 jobs in companies that use metal. It's much more complicated, but the president likes to have a very simple and straightforward message.
We'll talk more about picking winners and losers after the break. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are William Reinsch. He's senior advisor specializing in trade at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Ed Gerwin, from whom you just heard. He's senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. We are discussing the politics and substance of the Trump administration's trade policies. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to Emmanuel Annan from Accra, Ghana. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Bill Reinsch, to talk about this picking of winners and losers here in the United States. You know, some critics of the tariff policy, similar to what Ed Gerwin just said, actually results in sort of inadvertently maybe picking winners and losers. We're pitting some steel factories against other industries that use steel or imported steel to make value-added products. I even read recently where some value-added industries are asking for exemptions under this tariff policy, but they're getting pushback by domestic steel owners. So this can't be a good thing in terms of our economy.
Well, excuse the economy. The president, he really has a 1950s view of the economy. It's always about cars and steel. You don't find him talking about pharmaceuticals. You don't find him talking about chemicals. You don't find him talking about sort of downstream manufactured products. He talks about agriculture when he meets with farmers, and that's the only time. It's a very traditional approach to looking at manufacturing, driven, I think, in large part by what Ed was saying earlier, which is politics. What historians will say about this president 100 years from now is that I think his greatest mistake was that he doesn't see himself as the president of the whole country. He sees himself as the president of the people who voted for him. And those people are in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. They're people that make steel and cars. That's not the only thing they make, but he's focused on that. The other thing I'd say that has not been written about a lot, but if you look at the tariffs that have been imposed, they're a little bit odd in the sense that normally if you want to protect a downstream industry, you impose tariffs on the finished product and not on the parts and components. Because then what you do, that allows your manufacturer to bring in parts and components duty-free And it protects him from competition from his foreign competitor who's producing the same end product. The Trump tariffs are the reverse because they wanted to avoid an impact on consumers. So most of their tariffs in the first tranche of tariffs, most of them on China, were on parts and components and not on end products. So U.S. manufacturers basically have a double hit. Their inputs are becoming more expensive because of our tariffs, and their output has become more expensive because of Chinese retaliation.
Well, back to you, Ed Gerwin, to add or subtract anything Bill said. You already mentioned that we're losing jobs in some of these so-called downstream industries that use foreign inputs to make finished products. And we might be gaining a few, but you said that it's not really offsetting, and we are creating antagonisms among our own industries.
The Trade Partnership, which is a respected economic group here in town, estimates that we'll lose about 425,000 jobs because of these tariffs. We'll gain 25,000 new jobs. So on a net basis, we're going to lose about 400,000 jobs. Two-thirds of those jobs are in production and lower skilled work, which are the folks who President Trump says he's trying to help. So he's putting out of work 400,000 people of the type who he thinks are the people who he's trying to help. That's a big problem. And I agree with Bill. The president needs to focus on the future when it comes to trade. One of the things he never talks about is services. The United States exports $800 billion in services every year. That's about a quarter of our exports. That's huge for the United States. But the president doesn't talk about it. And in fact, when he cites trade statistics, he almost always leaves the effects of services out of those trade statistics.
Well, back to you, Bill Reinsch. And let's talk about the impact on farmers of tariffs that China imposed on soybeans and other products. As a result, the administration promised $12 billion designed to help these farmers who are facing tariffs from China and other countries that impose these levies on U.S. agricultural products in response to Mr. Trump's tariffs. But many farmers and their representatives in Congress, many of whom are Republican and staunch free traders, say that they prefer to sell their product and they don't want to receive aid. Do you think that this bailout is, in a sense, sort of a veiled admission that this tariff policy is not having the intended effect?
Yes, I think it's an attempt to deal with the political fallout. The farmers have been pretty clear that, I mean, they'll probably take the money. Who wouldn't? But they've been pretty clear that that's not what they want. They want to sell their products. The president has chosen to do all this at a very difficult time for them anyway. Commodity crop prices have been declining for 5 years. Soybean prices were already at near record lows when the tariffs began, and it's gotten much worse because of the tariffs. So they're taking big hits. They're unhappy. The $12 billion was an attempt to, I think, contain the political damage. And frankly, from the farmers that we've talked to, they're having some success with that. The farmers are worried. They're not yet prepared to part company with the president in political terms. We interviewed on a CSIS program the head of the Missouri Farm Bureau and asked exactly this question. And he comes from a part of the state that voted 80% for Trump. And we asked him if things had changed. And he said, well, you know, people are nervous. There's people who have fallen off. But he said the real crunch is likely to come in 2019 when the farmers go back for the next round of bank loans. Because, you know, the way that this kind of farming works is you come into your local banker. He gives you a loan in the winter that you use for seed, fertilizer, new equipment. You plant the crop, you harvest the crop, you use the proceeds to pay back the loan. The following year, you come back for a new loan. He thinks if next year the farmers come back and discover the banks have a higher interest rate, the banks don't want to loan them so much, the banks don't want to loan them at all, that's when the bottom may fall out of the president's support. You may not see it quite so much in the midterm elections this fall.
Your take, Ed Gerwin, on this so-called bailout, which might mollify farmers for now, but in the long run, it's really not the answer probably to the problem.
Well, the long run is exactly the point. One of the problems is that with foreign retaliation against American farm products, American farmers are going to lose markets potentially over the long term. So China is now importing lots of soybeans from Brazil and Argentina. And I read this week that they're starting to do more business with Russia. So Americans could get displaced in those markets on a more permanent basis. And the fact that farmers are getting temporary bailouts this year isn't really going to serve them in the long run. As Bill mentioned, affecting farm prices. Just last month, total farm export prices in the United States went down by 5%. That's the biggest drop in, I think, about 7 or 8 years. So there's a long-term problem for farmers that I think they are increasingly recognizing, and eventually this is going to become a political problem for the administration.
Turning to you, Bill Reinsch, what has been the reaction of leading Republican members of Congress in particular, given that the GOP is the traditional standard bearer, even more than Democrats, of free trade? Have they tried to push back?
Well, the short answer is there's been a lot of moaning and whining and complaining, but very little actual action. Several members of Congress have proposed various pieces of legislation, mostly dealing with the steel tariffs, that would attempt to give back to Congress the authority to either make those decisions or to veto them on the part of the president. It's not escaped notice that most of the members that are sponsoring those bills are retiring. And the ones that are running for re-election, they don't want to stand up to the president, I think, for two reasons. One, because their base is his base, and he's got near record levels of support in his base. And second, he has a history of going after people personally when they disagree with him. And right before an election, you don't really have a big incentive to do that. So they make a lot of unhappy noises, and they say this is a mistake and we shouldn't do that, and they threaten to have a hearing. But I don't see any concrete action this year in legislation.
Ed Gerwin, your take on the
Republicans? I absolutely agree with that. To build on that, if you look at Democrats who have, at least among elected officials, traditionally been opposed to open trade because of the role that unions play in national democratic politics, Democrats, to me, have a real choice to make. And that choice is, are they going to double down with the president on this protectionism, which many of their members have traditionally espoused, or are they going to listen to their base, which is increasingly becoming pro-trade? Something like 70% of Democratic voters and Democratic-leaning independents think that free trade agreements are largely a good thing. So the parties, when it comes to trade, are in many ways flipped. The bases are not aligned with the electeds here in Washington, and I think eventually this is going to sort itself out.
As we close, Bill Reinsch, quickly back to the real culprit, China. What approach or policies would actually do more to deter China from its unfair trading practices and stealing of intellectual property?
From a tactical point of view, Ed is right. What works is building coalitions and applying collective pressure. At the same time, I think that what Ambassador Lighthizer is asking the Chinese to do is to fundamentally restructure their economy and to restructure it in a more market-oriented way that will reduce the party's control over the state. They're not going to do that. And so I think that what we have forgotten in this debate is that I think the real battleground is third countries, where we can compete with China on a level playing field. The Chinese goal is to create world champions in multiple sectors that will go out and compete and beat the Americans. Well, where are they going to beat the Americans? I mean, they can beat the Americans in China because they can control access to their economy. Where we really fight them is in Europe, India, Africa, Latin America. That's where the battleground of the future is, and we're ignoring that. We should be spending a lot more time focused on that.
Well, you get the last word, Ed Gerwin, in terms of, in addition to working with our allies to isolate China and to force them into compliance with the World Trade Order, what other approaches do you think would work?
The first thing is, I think we need to really focus on the problem. The administration is all over the lot. They're talking about trade deficits and tariffs and all kinds of other issues, when the focus really ought to be on China's technology practices. And we need to send a focused team of negotiators to China to really, really drill down on that. I agree with Bill. We're not going to get China to change their underlying model, but we can perhaps get them to change some of their most abusive practices when it comes to this. The second thing is, I think for the United States, we need to focus on our own future. We've cut funding for commercialization, all of the kinds of things, for example, that we did in the 1960s that helped us build a vibrant economy. And this administration has been cutting that kind of funding. We really need to focus on building ourselves up so that we can be a competitor no matter what China does.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, William Reinsch. He's Senior Advisor, Specializing in Trade at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Edward Gerwin, Senior Fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.